Our gospel reading this morning is a very familiar passage we know of as the prodigal son or the waiting loving father from Luke's gospel, chapter 15. There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me." And so he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all that he had and traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that region, and he began to be in need. And so he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed his pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating. No one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am, dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.'" And so he went off to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran out and put his arm around him and kissed him. The son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer am worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his slaves, "Quickly bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and is now alive. He was lost and is found." And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked him what was going on. He replied, "Your brother has come home, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he got him back safe and sound." And then the son became very angry and refused to go in. His father came out to him and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, "Listen, for all these years I have been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you have never given me so much as a goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours comes back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you kill the fatted calf for him." And then the father said, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice, because this brother of yours was dead and has come back to life. He was lost and has been found." The Gospel of the Lord. As we have been saying, we're going to offer a program throughout the Lenten season based on this particular gospel passage. And all of us can probably give at least 25 different versions of sermons on this particular passage because it is so rich in so many ways. I've chosen this little booklet by Henry Nouwen because it has some very interesting, in-depth kind of journey through his life and how it all relates to the prodigal son. Most of the material comes from a book, which is written by Henry Nouwen, called The Return of the Prodigal Son. This booklet that you have is based on some of this and also a number of 100 or so talks that Henry Nouwen gave over the years. I think it's important to give you a little bit of background to better understand what's going to go on in here, how it can apply to you, and perhaps where we can find the richness of Nouwen's experience. For those of you that don't know, Henry Nouwen was a theologian who was really a professor at Harvard. And in the 1960s, he did a little stint at Yale Divinity School, which is where I had contact with him, and went to a couple of his presentations and also was very much aware of his writings. He's written a lot of books, but he also is the kind of guy that to know him, you have to be willing to kind of go deep. He's a very deep person and always looking for one thing, which comes true in this particular book and comes through in his journey that we will take with him. He has always been looking for what he calls homecoming. Homecoming to him means finally coming to that place where he recognizes himself before God as a loved person. Because like so many of us, it's hard for us to kind of wrap our minds around it, never mind our hearts, around the idea that we are loved by God. There's so many things in life that keep us from acknowledging that. Sometimes we feel we're unworthy because we look at what other people can do that we don't. Sometimes we match ourselves in terms of our faith to the faith lives of other people. All that comparison, but also the things that we choose to do that we think render us not likable. All those things keep us from ever really, really, really wrapping ourselves around the idea that God loves us the way we are. Also, we've been taught not to do that. We've been taught to think about all the things that are wrong and try to right them so that we can have God eventually in eternity. Well, the same thing is true for Nouwen, and Nouwen had a very interesting journey. What brought him to this, and this is a painting, this is a copy of the painting that is at the the Hermitage, Museum in St. Petersburg, Russia. The painting, the original, is about 9 by 11 feet, so it's huge. And when you see the original, you understand why this does not even compare. I put a copy of, on the bulletin, a copy of that, and also you have it on the front of your little booklet. The reason being is to understand why this was so important to Henry Nouwen. During the 1960s, not only was he doing his own journey, but he got very much involved in the work against the injustices going on in Central America. You remember Nicaragua, that whole thing that was going on in the 60s. Well, Henry Nouwen became a gospel person around that issue, and he was speaking all over the United States. In fact, at one point, he had spent a whole year of nonstop speaking to communities for the whole year around the United States, trying to get people to understand how you take the gospel and apply it to a situation of injustice that we had down in Nicaragua. It was at the end of his time of doing these speeches that he came to his friend's house to spend the night before he returned back to Harvard. When he walked in the door, he was completely beaten. He was exhausted, he was tired, and as he puts it, when the crowds, the cheering crowds and the jeering crowds kind of dissipated, I found myself feeling extremely alone and destroyed because of the output that he had given. When he walked into his friend's house, he walked in and they closed the door behind him. After they greeted him, he turned around to hang his coat on the rack that was there. And on the back of the entrance door was a poster of this painting. And all he could see was the father and the son. He did not know that this was the prodigal son. He just saw the image of the man embracing the kneeling down son in his ratty clothes. And he identified for the first time in his life with an unknown. He said, I so desperately wanted to know that God cared about not so much what I was doing, but cared about me. And after traveling the whole United States and all these hundreds of communities, I desperately needed to know it again. And he saw that image and it clicked. And that began a journey that took many years until he died. And he always came back to this image. And when he came back from a retreat or he came back from another experience, he'd come back to this image and he kept looking at it and finding all kinds of things. He had the opportunity and the blessing to go to St. Petersburg because friends of his made this trip to Russia and dragged him for a vacation. And so they went to the Hermitage and they saw the original And the person who had made the trip had already called ahead and got permission for him to sit by himself in front of the painting as long as he wanted to and as many times as he wanted to. So for a week and a half, he was there for hours and hours sitting in front of this painting. And as he was sitting there, he went through his life. He reflected on his life. And there were so many things that had happened in his life that didn't make sense. And he was trying to make sense of it, all of it with the understanding that I need to know and experience that I am coming home. I am home in God. And so the characters in here at various times he identifies with. As he did on the first time he saw it, he identified with the prodigal son. Later on, when he joined L'Arche, which is a community that deals and helps people who have mental retardation and mental illnesses, it's a community where they have constant supervision and constant support. He left his teaching career and went to live full-time in that community, L'Arche, which is in France, and eventually came over to the one called Daybreak, which is the same version here in the United States. And he lived in that community. And the first thing he met when he got there was a question about, what am I doing here? Who am I? And a little girl came up to him. Her name was Linda. Came up to him, very severe Down syndrome, walked over to him and threw her arms around him and said, I am so happy you are here. And he realized who he was supposed to be. He was supposed to be the person who could receive instead of give. In order to receive, he had to begin to change the way he saw things. Because when somebody embraces you, and somebody shows love to you, you cannot help if you respond. You cannot help but respond in a way that changes your perspective. And so now he identified with the Father, receiving the gift from the Son instead of vice versa, and now having something to offer the members of this community. Later on, as he reflected, there are other characters in the painting. If you look at your bulletin, you will see, you can see three very clearly, but there are actually four. The three that you do see, the guy on the left, on the right side of the page, the one standing mostly in the light, that is the elder son, who is standing on a platform away from them. There's a man sitting next to him, sitting down, looking, staring off into space. Next to him, kind of behind, there is a woman who is standing there with her arms folded. You can't see that, but it is in the painting. And then up here, in the corner, up here, when you look at it, you can barely make out that there's another woman standing there leaning against an arch. And I wanted to tell you how he was moved and touched and saw himself through these characters. And it'll help you understand why we're going to read some of the things we're going to read. He says in this book, the two women standing behind the father at different distances, the seated man staring into space and looking at no one in particular, and the tall man standing erect and looking critically at the event on the platform in front of him, they all represent different ways of not getting involved. There is indifference, curiosity, daydreaming, and attentive observation. There is staring, gazing, watching, and looking. There is standing in the background, leaning against an arch, sitting with arms crossed, standing with hands gripping each other. Every one of these inner and outer postures is all too familiar to me. Some are more comfortable than others, but all of them are ways of not getting involved. What that meant for him was the father and the son that we are going to focus on an awful lot, that dynamic, takes place. And four people are witnesses to it. And each one of them so wrapped up in his or her own stuff that they're missing the key. And how much of my religious life And how much of my life, period, if I look at it from that perspective, have I been standing by watching and not ever entering into the experience? It's easy to talk about. It's a different thing to put myself in a position to understand that in original blessing, that is before Adam and Eve created original sin, in original blessing from the moment of our conception and before until long after our death into eternity, we are loved for who we are. It makes a great banner. And it makes a nice title on a book. But the experience, brothers and sisters, we will explore through the eyes of Henry Nouwen, his words, and Rembrandt's rendition of the return of the prodigal son. That is why I ask you to, when you take your booklet, the first, you see, we already missed 4 days. So I'll catch you up real quick. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. The first one, if you read the first one, very simply, when you read this, you may be confused. But don't be surprised. Because these are things taken out of context that relate to the picture. That's why the picture is important. The important thing is, whenever you stand in the light, you are always going to be aware of what's missing. When you stand, for example, in the presence of goodness, you're always aware that there's something not so good about you. Whenever we stand in the sunlight, there is always a shadow. The truth is, when we stand before God and we approach God in any kind of prayer, in any kind of worship, in any kind of instance at all, we are always going to have a sense that there's something missing. There's something wrong with us. We shouldn't be here. Thursday, he talks about original blessing. If you find yourself in that position, remember, before you were born, from the very beginning of the existence of God until the eternal end of God, which is never, you have been loved for who you are. Not for what you do, not for what you accomplish, for who you are. And on the next day, when you find yourself there, when you accept and acknowledge the fact that you have been loved or you are loved, to whatever degree intellectually you can do that, you're going to find yourself a sense of being lost. But being lost means somehow that you're going to be found. And here's what's really important. He underlines on the third Friday, he underlines this very simple truth. So much of what happens in our lives, brothers and sisters, can challenge us beyond understanding and belief. Many times we find ourselves behind the struggle, underneath the burden, feeling overwhelmed and overpowered, even if we're talking about doubting ourselves as being valuable people. Doubting our own self-worth, doubting that we have any real purpose, doubting that we are people who are really blessed. And he reminds us in the very simple words. This little prayer I would suggest, you can mark this off. It's the second paragraph on Friday. This might be a good way to start our reading every day with this very simple prayer. I've heard so often of your love, but I just don't believe it. Mostly, I believe that you only wish to judge me. But today, I'll remain here in your loving presence and present myself to you in all my vulnerability. Because heart speaks to heart. We start there. And we hear on Friday, on Saturday, because you accept the possibility of being vulnerable before God, your perspective will begin to change. You will begin to review your life from a very different perspective. And at times, you too may identify with one of the characters in the painting. At times, you may be a bystander. At times you may feel kind of distracted. At times you may find yourself completely detached from the reality of love. But you always come back to the Father and the Son. And when we talk about the elder son, we talk about the resentments of our lives. We talk about the hurts and the angers of our lives. We talk about those things that keep us tied in place because they never see the light of love. And what will be underscored in here as we go through week or day by day is that, brothers and sisters, Easter is all about hope. We as Christian people are all about hope. Nothing is ever finished. Nothing is ever done. And even when we come to Easter this year, there will still be more journey ahead of us. And so, in short, with all of that being said, and this isn't really a sermon, this is kind of an instruction, I ask you to consider taking this booklet and reading a little bit every day. You see, they're not very long. And as I have done in my book, I've underlined certain phrases that hit me, that are particular to me. Not everything is going to hit you the same way. We are all on our own separate journey. But I think this is an invitation for each one of us to let God speak, to sit in the presence of a loving Father and let God speak. Not just in the 5 minutes that you're there, but taking the thought with you through the day, who knows through whom God will speak again. And God will touch you and allow you to know that indeed you too are loved eternally for who you are. Not what you do. Not how you live. Who you are. There is in that place no sin, no fault that ever, ever can overpower the gift of God's love, ever. So here's to celebrating our original blessings as individuals and as a congregation. May God bless us and let us pray for each other on the journey. Amen.